And away we go. All right. Not alcoholic, in Tokyo, Japan. I've been here since 2000, and I've been in the program this time. I've been sober since 2000, basically. Let's see. Let's see. Hang on. Let me trigger something here. Okay, that's better. I guess these stories are about like what it was like, what happened, and what was it? Something like that. What happened, what it was like, what happened. I don't know, I experienced strength and hope, something along those lines. So I'll just try to get some of that in there. I guess my drinking story basically started when I was six. I was living overseas, expat as a kid already. And so my dad gave me a beer. And I remember this vividly. I drank the beer and I'm walking up the steps and I'm just kind of like, oh, this is kind of fun feeling. This is what all this beer drinking is about. Cause, at the time, like this is back in the 70s, there's like a lot of parties and, expats and stuff like, and lots of just crazy going to bars. Like dad had a motorcycle. So I'd be like on the back of his motorcycle driving around, riding with him. And he would always go to these bars with coworkers. This is like in Trinidad. And in Guatemala, so like basically, developing countries, so kind of like a lot lower bar of what's acceptable over there. So anyway, that's kind of like, so I guess the point of that is just like for me, it was just all that was normal, that kind of drinking, that kind of just love of that relationship with alcohol, just as normal from the beginning for me. And so then we moved back to the States. The things calmed down a lot in my household as far as the drinking, my dad and whatnot. When I was 16, I was able to go to a boarding school. It was basically a state magnet school, and in that case, it was basically my first experience with sex, drugs, and rock and roll at 16. I just wasn't ready, really, and the people that I was with that were already like kind of gifted and talented, whatever. We're used to getting away with how to fly under the radar, and but I wasn't. And so like one time this guy I was with, he wanted to get some Everclear, like let's drink Everclear. And so like that was the first, so he was on his back and he started throwing up, so we had to go and take care of him. And so the RA came, and so I got busted, and so I got expelled basically for drinking when I was 16. Hardcore. And I think, like I said, the people I was with were drinking. Were I was, that was kind of what you did, and but I just didn't know how to get away with it yet. And then I went to university eventually, and then I got kicked out of university too for drinking. Imagine that. How do you get kicked out of university for drinking? I did, because I was in a dormitory, and just kind of some things happened. And so basically, just fast forward through like my 20s, I consider it my, like, I call it the lost decade, because I was just like, I always just had crappy jobs. And I would go to school for a year, I'd go to university for a year, then I'd drop out for 2 years and move around. I would had really crappy jobs and crappy roommates, and you drank to put up with all this shit. Then you kept yourself in that situation because you're drinking, it's just like kind of a vicious cycle, as it were. And fast forward to this. Oh yeah, and at the end, like in 98, so this is like I was like 28 at the time. I was sober for like 6 months, and this was like literally, I just didn't want to be homeless. I was just, I had the thing, I could either I was just in a situation where I was like going to be without a, I think I slept with my mom's for like a month or something. So I had to not drink, and so that was what that was about. And this, and then the situation I got in, I was living with a guy. Oh yeah, this guy was my sponsor, my boss, my landlord. What else? And so for like 6 months, he owned an apartment complex and a business, so I was able to like live there. That's right. And and so that's what that, but I wasn't really done drinking yet. I just didn't, like I said, I just had, I don't know. Some people, I know friends of mine, like this guy, his dad said, either you quit drinking or you have to move out. And like, he's like, bye dad. And it's like, he was homeless for like 3 years, because he just, so drinking was that much, meant that much to him. But in my case, I just like that. I didn't want to be sober. I didn't want to be homeless. So I stopped drinking at that time for like 6 months. So then I started drinking again when I got some cash up and got back together. And then at this point, like my wife's Japanese, and we met back in like a long time ago. We met, and then like we broke up because I wasn't getting my shit together. Wasn't because she moved back to Japan, and it just was taking me a long, long, long time to get my shit get over here. And so finally, we got back together in like '99, the last year, and that's when I finished my university, get everything. The plan was to come to Japan in 2000, and that's pretty much what I did. So I drank that last year in 2000, and then I was still drinking when I came over here. And so for me, the big thing about Japan was a geographical. And I came over here, and I was going to start a new life. You know, I was going to start a new life over here. And so, but the way I was drinking, I was just bringing that with me. So it was actually literally, it's manageable, you know, functional alcoholic. It's no fun being a functional alcoholic. I love that one. There's no fun in being a functional alcoholic. In 2000, I was just, you know, little by little, I was working a little bit and drinking. And then like, there's like literally one day I had to teach a class at 7 in the morning. And from 7 till 8. So I got out at 8 and I was like, okay, hair of the dog. So I'm gonna get a hair of the dog at 8 o'clock in the morning. It didn't work. I still felt like shit. And so I had another one, and then guess what? I'm drunk at 8:30 in the morning. And so I drank that day during the day, and I had work commitments that day that I had to cancel. And so yeah, that for me, that was like drinking, that was one time of drinking during the day. And I call it like the tip of the iceberg. I felt it all starting all over again, you know, just like, you know, I'm like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do that over here. And so I did. And so there was like that incident. And then like, there's beer machines over here, right? If you've heard of the beer machines. And so, but they're supposed to shut off at 11 o'clock at night. And, so I got two beers and, you know, two big tall boys. And then like, the thing was, I didn't like I was working, I was getting paid on the table at the time, so I'd cash the cash packet. So I just took out my $10 and gave the rest to my wife. And then like I had to go into her purse to get the money that I'd just given her to get more beer a couple of times. In the morning, she's like, "You went into my purse to get the money?" She's like, for her, that was like proof that I was a real alcoholic because I couldn't just stop. I had to go into her purse to get my money. And so for her, I just think it's in this culture, I don't know, there's something like that. You two should have been enough, you know, you didn't have to get six or eight. So yeah, but it's like, so just within that week with like three or four little things happen, and just like, so basically on like a Sunday morning, like it was great because my wife, my, you know, fiance at the time, we were kind of on the same page. You know, she's like, "It's, don't you think it's time that you," and I go back to those meetings, and she's like, "Yeah, I go back to those meetings." And so, and then on Monday, I came back in Tokyo, AA, and I've been here ever since. Yeah, just one thing real quick with us. A lot of times, a very common story over here with people with Japanese spouses and wives especially, is that they'll say, you know, the culture is different over here. Like, their drinking is kind of what you do. They just put up with, there's, if you drink at work parties and you tell off your boss, you know, like, and here's another thing I think about you, like, that's acceptable over here because that's just really, oh, he was drunk, it's okay. So there's a lot of so anyway, so a lot of friends of mine that have Japanese wives would say, like, you know, their wives were like, "Oh, don't be so rash, you don't have to quit drinking, you know, why quit drinking, you know, like don't be too rash, you can still drink." And so luckily, my wife didn't do that. She was like, "Yeah, you should stop drinking. I agree with you." And so it was great. And yeah, so then Tokyo AA, at first, my first sponsor, her name was Liz. Great, great, great. So we did the steps. We didn't do with the book. She just basically, like, for example, step three was like, "Do you believe?" I'm like, "I believe." She's okay, good. Now we'll do inventory next week. So it was just very, you know, alternative. And she didn't, even when we did the fourth and fifth with her, I didn't write anything out. I just did it, you know, fourth and fifth at one. And then, and so it was really good, to do it. I think that would have been the only way for me to do it was that way at the time. And, over the years, I've had different people say like, "Oh, you didn't write down your inventory. You're going to drink." So I listened to them, you know, for some reason. So then I went back to her and like, "I want to do another inventory, another, you know." And so we did like out of Hazelden worksheet. So she still was not doing the prescribed method from the book, which is good. And yeah, so I was able to, I mean, unfortunately, I was listening to people around me that saying like, oh, you got to do this, you have to do this, you have to do this. Well, finally, I finally realized, recently, is that when somebody says, you have to do this to stay sober, basically saying, I had to do this to stay sober, so I've been able to discount that whenever I hear people say that, like, no, it's not the way. Anyway, so yeah. Oh yeah. So and I founded a co-founder of a free thinkers meeting here in Tokyo. It's still active. It's still going on. This is at the same time as like this must have been like 2012, something like that. And so I did found the free thinkers meeting. It was good. And I found that one. Yeah, I don't think I have much more to say. Just it's been kind of yeah, expat small communities, a lot of times small communities, and it just really kind of gets, after a while, you just like, it becomes personalities too much. And so that, there's a lot of that. There's just a lot of, but you just have to deal with it. Like, I don't get along with this person, I don't get along with, that's fine. Just, but there's not that many meetings to go to. So I have to kind of grin and bear it sometimes. Yeah, just recently. So I just now started going to the agnostic online meetings about a year and a half ago, and I can't go back. I can't, just like they say that the AA ruins your drinking. Agnostic and secular meetings have ruined regular meetings, or traditional meetings for me. I just can't. They just don't speak to me, and it's like not by choice. It's just the way it is. And so it's good to be here. Good to, still be. If I can be, like, experience strength and hope, I have no idea. But just I think for me, I just kind of end with this, is that like, it's really important for me to know that the drinking, the way that I drink, drinking means something different to me than it does to other people, and it really does. And that I could either drink. Somebody's mentioned Mad Dog earlier. It's like, yeah, I remember Mad Dog. I could either drink, and that's how I would drink. That's, or I could either drink, or I could have a life worth living. And so for today, I choose to have a life worth living and be among the living again. So, and I think that's all I got. Thank you.